Thanks for joining us now on KVCR for KVC Arts, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. On this edition of the program, Mr. Brenton Wood. He hit it big in 1967 with the Oogum Boogum song, Gimme a Little Sign, and toward the end of the year, Baby You Got It. We'll hear about those, of course, a bit later in the program. Behind us now, a recording session of Freddie and Don and the Rockets, something recorded before he was even known as Brenton Wood. First of all, you know, I was telling somebody the other day that I know your real name, but still throughout the entirety of last time you were here, I was saying Mr. Wood, and sir, how about Mr. Wood this? And it only hit me after the interview that it should have been Mr. Smith. Were born Alfred Jesse Smith.
Right.
Would you mind sharing
your
name,
please?
You
even got the middle name.
Yes, sir. Tell us about how and when the name Brenton Wood came from. Who, where, and what inspired this?
Well, there was a person back in my day passed away before I got the hit record, but his name was Danny Cameron, and he lived in Brentwood, and I came up with the name his dream artist. So now I became Brenton Wood, and from then on we just said Brenton Wood. But that's good, you know, because Alfred Smith goes out in the street a lot, you know, and he don't want to be recognized everywhere he goes.
Now that's actually really cool. I was wondering, actually, just even earlier today, do more people know you as Fred or Freddie or anything like that?
Well, no Freddie
these days,
but Alfred and Brenton Wood.
Okay. And now, speaking of Freddie, though, there was a brief period there was Freddie and the Rockets, or at least Freddie.
Like I say, I got to consult those people because that song had been out. I recorded that song when I was like 17, 16 years old. And now it's revived itself, and they're selling records or whatever they are, you know. Mm-hmm. But they ain't sending me no money.
I tried to track down. I just went to YouTube and did a Freddie and the Rockets, and whether it was a misspelling or what, but I couldn't find anything. What was the song, and was there just the one single, or did you do a few?
It was a song called Too Fat. What was the flip side of that? There are hearts so true, why won't you treat me like you're my love? I've given all my love. Given all my love, and so we're glad I've given. And I've given everything that's part of me. Hearts so true.
Hearts so true. Hearts so true. Had to go to the chorus on that one.
Yeah. You go going way back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is not early 60s, maybe even late 50s?
57, 58.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, wow. And it was several years before you hit major success with the Oogum Boogum song.
Yeah.
I mean, Give Me a Little Sign, that one hit bigger, but your first big hit, the Oogum Boogum song, you did have a few singles out before hitting with that one. Were you writing at that point, or was this a situation of songwriters?
I've been writing ever since I've been in this business, until I kind of got a lot of the spirit to do it because of the fact that other people were getting my credits. Mm-hmm. You know, so I said, well, you know, what do I know about the business? I'm trying to learn, you know. So I studied my trade papers and my Billboard, Record World, check, Cashbox, and I discovered how records are spread from city to city. And each disc jockey wants to be the first one to pay whatever, you know. That's something new that sounds different from what we're doing already. So I tried to focus on, you know, just, you know, who I was singing to. And then we got the idea to write the song about the fashion changes. Fashion changes came about with miniskirt, bell-bottom pants, hot pants, all that, you know, 60s stuff that everybody so-called rebelling against, you know, the devil music.
Right. Your songs, especially in the early days, were they all yours, or did you have any? Because, you know, so many labels,
well,
you know,
had
the guys out of the Brill Building and, you know, writing for them and all that kind of thing. Submitting,
well, you
songs.
Know, there was a lot of companies that had some writers on their payroll, and they give them a check every week or whatever, every month or whatever, however they paid them. And they have the tendency to try to select, but I had to go through the changes. But nobody really knows what's going to be a hit.
Right, right.
You know, and you just have to go along with and try to program your music in with what's going on in the radio at this present time.
Sure.
And you got to fit in there so they can have that. Well, this won't destroy my programming. And it goes from that point on, you know. And that Oogum Boogum thing was really, you know, I say, well, I was going to use Abracadabra.
Oh, that's what they brought it to you as, right? Somebody suggested this. Actually, sort of a big question about that. I know that you wrote it, but it's not like you just went off to your writer's hamlet somewhere and did it in an afternoon.
No, someone gave
it?
Me a song to sing, and I said, well, I don't like this song.
Yeah.
So I changed it to the way I was thinking and gave it the name Oogum Boogum. Which I think was kind of crazy, but it was like...
It's catchy.
It was catchy.
Yeah.
And everybody, what did that mean? What did that mean? So it kind of directed me to, you know, what I'm doing today. Right now, I only do the songs in my repertoire.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, that's good. That's a blessing for me because usually I have to try to find out what the people like and add that to my show. But no, I just got my songs out, and the kids like the songs that their parents like played on the weekends when they were cleaning the house.
Mm-hmm.
And all the other songs came in between there.
That's exactly how it was for me. When I was a child, I knew your name and people like, say, Danny and the Juniors and the Drifters. I knew all of that long before my stuff, you know, Queen or Led Zeppelin or something like that.
Right.
And so I was just, I feel really blessed to have been introduced to this type of music way back when. When you were writing the Oogum Boogum song, this was actually, wasn't it written over a period of several weeks? I'm just a little bit out of time while you're at an aluminum factory, I think.
Well, yeah, I was working at Harvey Aluminum. It's now called Martin Marietta. And they were making bombshells and all kind of stuff like that. I was like the overhead crane operator. I would take the billets out and I stacked them with the overhead crane. And it took me about 6 weeks to do that song. I would write a verse a night at work, and I go home in the morning and I go over that verse and incorporate that with what I was doing in the songs I was writing. And the picture just arrived that I was talking about. And then I said, well, wow, this is going to be funny. It was.
Where did you even come up with the words? It feels like, you know, just something as you're just wandering along, muttering, and it goes with your steps. Oogum, boogum, step, left, well,
I kinda
right.
I kind of use your musical scales, you know, a little bit up, start from the top, I go to the bottom, work to the bottom, do re mi's and stuff like that. And then I come back down, go back down the scale, and then dun 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 dun.
Yeah. Again, it was just so nice and so wonderful for so many people. I still love that song, and people think that they don't know it by
title. They know it if they hear it.
Exactly, that's
it.
You
know, and that song had a lot of recognition through the years.
Oh, and still today. You'll still hear it on the oldie stations and whatnot. Yeah, well, it's my understanding that you really started work on your songwriting and other musical skills included. It was well after high school. A lot of people that I speak with, they're 15 or even 14 or younger, especially in the late 50s and early 60s, some of the people getting their hits at an early age. I caught an interview with you once when you spoke of really being captured by the piano. And we're talking age 7 or 4, maybe even 2, an age which would have really been before any comprehension of the instrument.
Yeah. Being raised in a poor household with 11 kids, and television was very snowy. Couldn't see, couldn't make out what you were looking at, you know. But, you know, I mean, I just went to the recreational center one afternoon, and there was a piano on the stage, and there was someone on the stage playing the piano. And I had never heard of piano, actually, because we were just sitting around the radio and having our entertainment that way, you know, Inner Sanctum and all those different programs that came out early on radio stations where they had all them, most of the stuff was like Inner Sanctum and like the one they have on TV after The Price is Right. Today they have some of those programs back in the day still on TV, you know, but you know, it's just broken down to the ones that I'm trying to think of the names so I can direct it. But, you know, that's a comfort age. You know? Being locked in and saying, well, damn, I didn't know that much time was going by. But when I discovered that, I said, damn, I'm glad I didn't waste too much time because I was really interested in what I was doing. studying what made a hit record. I mean, how does it spread to the next community? You know, and that really interested me because I start in the neighborhood. And the neighborhood just passes it on to the media.
Yeah.
And the media exploits it, and everybody makes money.
Except the artist.
Well, you know, and that's the part that really upset me because I worked hard to do what I was doing.
Yeah.
And everybody else was taking my credits. I produced Oogum Boogum, you know, and Give Me Those Signs. Actually, but I had my writer, Joe Hooven, was an arranger from Yesterday. And he just added his flavoring to my flavoring, and we came up with Give Me Those Signs.
Mm, sweet.
You know, it was like, it was a slow song at first.
Really?
Yeah. He goes, if you want me, don't keep leading me on. Stop pretending, girl, I'll be gone. But if you let me.
If you do want me, give me love to show. Some kind of sign, girl. Oh, my baby, to show me that you're mine, girl. Oh, yeah. Just give me some kind of sign, girl. Oh, my darling, to show me that you're mine, girl. All right.
Tell me about that moment when you or he suggested, if you found a bump, when you changed that so severely.
Well, I changed it and I went into playing it on the piano. I learned how to play my own song.
Okay, okay.
You know, and actually, it came out that way. Because prior to that, they had a company called Liberty Records. Liberty Records had 50 Mention and all the rest of those people on Liberty. But the people who ran Liberty Records also ran Double Shot Records. That was the label that I came out on, which was the brother of the lawyer that was running Liberty Records.
You mentioned Give Me a Little Sign, and again, this is probably your biggest hit. These words are never heard. That is, give me little sign, but rather, give me some kind of sign. So how did we end up with the title, Give Me a Little Sign? Is that just relaxed phrasing?
It just depends on how you want to deliver the song. You know, I mean, yeah, give me a little sign, but give me some kind of sign. I said, to give me some kind of sign. Oh, my baby.
Yeah.
You know, a kind of Irish thing. You know, like, what's his name? The guy that came from Europe.
There were a couple.
I'm talking about...
Are you talking about Boy George?
Yeah.
Karma Chameleon, that's what you just hummed.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
So he had that type of thing, that oh, my baby type thing in his tongue, a sing-along type thing. And I just incorporated it.
Wow. Okay. Well, Give Me a Little Sign did better on the national charts than, I guess, Oogum Boogum. But there's something interesting about this period of time. These days, you know, we hear about people having success on the charts, but this is at a national level. And at one point, you could see regional success, which completely eclipses any national chart. And I think Oogum Boogum, going back to that for a moment, it may have been in the 30s or the 20s or so on the national charts, but it hit number 3 and number 1 in San Diego and L.A., which is where you're basically from, Compton area.
Right,
okay.
Right.
All right. And you were born in Shreveport. You were pretty young, though, when you moved out here, though, right?
2, 3.
Oh, okay. So that probably eliminates any sounds of New Orleans coming through into your music.
Well, you know, the influence is one thing that you get, I mean, encourages you to do something that you can compete with that. You know, I mean, I was influenced by Jesse Belvin, Good Night, My Love, Pleasant Dreams, and I'm Nat King Cole.
Oh, yeah. I'd read Sam Cooke as well.
Sam Cooke,
for you.
Yeah. He gave me a lot of knowledge or insight on diction. I had a few songs that I had grown up with that I didn't really know because the artist didn't speak very clearly.
Right. Yeah, that's still true today.
I was touching, well, you know, I think I've got a Smokey Robinson song that say, I don't know what the hell he's saying there. But he said, I'm just about at the end of my road. I can't stop trying. I can't give up hope. That makes sense. But I'm just a crawdad in a row. I said, what the hell are you talking about? So it took me a while to learn that Smokey Robinson song.
The Crawdad tied us back to Louisiana somehow there. Okay, so we'll live with that one for
yeah,
a sec.
At least.
Oh, that's funny. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR, also at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming with a rebroadcast of my conversation with Brenton Wood, who passed away in early January of 2025. We heard about some of his biggest hits earlier in the program, Give Me a Little Sign and the Oogum Boogum song. Later, we'll hear about one of his songs, which was written for every guy in the neighborhood. First, though, finding out what to sing, what could work, and along with that, what might not.
You know, but I played what I knew, and it related to what I was doing. And then I noticed that a lot of songs had the same particular format.
Yeah.
And if you get in the format can direct you on completing a song. You know, because you'll find out 99% of them are the same format.
Mm-hmm.
You got the grand opening, your bridge, and you repeat the bridge.
Yep.
That's what I did with Oogum Boogum. I went into the studio with a group, you know, and after they finished their date in the studio, I asked them to follow me on the piano to do what I was doing. And they did, and we did that in a couple of takes, and it came out pretty good. I took that particular tape home after we got the track, and I worked it for like 6 weeks. And I changed it a lot of times. I wish I would still have those lyrics somewhere around the house. I may have, you know, but I'm still looking for stuff around my house.
I would have loved to have known what some of the original incarnations or whatever iterations of that song versus what it became. It blows me away that some of these were actually slow before coming back on it. That's phenomenal.
And that's when I just kind of discovered that I should do up-tempo songs also, because I was really thinking about getting a hit. I needed some money. And the money would come from a hit record, I thought, you know. Then I got to the part where I think, well, I'm in the same shape that the other people was in. They didn't get no money out of this. It's crazy. Well, I found out that the music is run by a bunch of people that have control over your stuff, you know, and they the ones that made up my paperwork. My paperwork related to them. And I kept doing that. I did a thing with Al Bennett was the owner of Liberty Records. Hal Seizucker was the lawyer for Liberty Records. I got a lot of misleading by them because I had representation. They represented me. Thinking about it, as the time went by, I see what I was doing wrong, but I said, I see what I got to do now. What I got to do now is, I said, the only thing they left me with is the name. So I went to a club and I asked him to let me take the door and then they take the bar. And he went for it. And then after he went for it, I went in there and the first night I made $5. The second night I made $15. And the next night, it was a line around the block.
Wow. And they still gave you the door?
Gave me the door.
Oh, sweet deal there.
So I think I had to get up and get another place that's bigger. So, I mean, I'm spreading like the record normally spreads anyway. You know, from city to city, state to state, I say, I need a bigger club now.
That's a good problem to have.
You know, so I say, well, you know, what I want to do is just go on and take care of this thing myself. And if I can get paid, I'll get paid what I say I want, and you can have the rest. So that's how I got to this point today.
And you're still doing, say, the doo-wop. You're not doo-wop, but these doo-wop cruises or the malt shop cruises.
Well,
they don't really know
where I'm coming from.
Well, you've got some that would fall into the doo-wop, some sort of early R&B, and just wait till I get to
When I decided I wanted to make some money, I had to make it the hard way, the Chitlin Circuit way. Yeah. So when I did that, I just followed through. And I was winning more than I was losing. So I stuck to it. And I was noticing how all the fellas on the block, other homies, were going together, breaking up, and going back together. So there came me and you. Me and You is the one stayed on the charts, really, at a certain spot. It just stayed in the 70s, year two. Whatever, it just stayed there.
This one also came from the album Baby You Got It. And it also, this one does feel like a doo-wop kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's something about this one. There's a point in the song, in Me and You, where you start talking.
You know, we've been together a long time. And you know what? We can get a little old lightweight thing going if we really put our hearts to it. If you try and I try, girl, there's no telling how far we can go. Remember those loving fools, Romeo and Juliet?
You right. start off singing, then you talk.
Right.
Was this planned initially? You know, yeah. as you were writing it, you wanted to include dialogue?
I was telling a story.
Okay.
And telling the homies how to, you know, hopefully rectify some of the problems they were having with their ladies. You know, and if we can get away from it all, and you don't tell them how far we can go. You know, remember those loving fools, Romeo and Juliet? They thought they had a thing going. But they just didn't know. They had no idea how it could really be. But we know. Me and you.
That one, it really felt like one of those burn barrel kind of things, you know, out on the street corner, four or five guys.
That's why I was telling my son here, you know, all these songs is like stuff that happens in the neighborhood, and you write about it. I call it giving the people what they want.
Well, you were also recognizing, as you said earlier, a certain formula, or you were seeing what works on the charts and what really didn't.
Right, and what songs I was watching, how they develop into and to get on the charts in my neighborhood. Sometimes I thought that was a good way to do it, because sometimes if I thought a song was going to be a big hit, then I would probably hire that artist before the song became a big hit. And then I can get them at a lower price than I can when they got that hit. I learned how to do what I'm doing, and I had to go through it and then do's and don'ts before I got it together. Comes out, I was thinking right, in my favor, and it worked. So I don't think I should try to look for another way out.
Yeah, no, you had it happening.
Yeah.
Now, knowing that you play piano, when you write a song, do you take it to the point of being complete with all the instrumentation already worked out? Or do you bring the words to somebody and maybe a rough sketch of the melody?
No. I write a song, I write around what I can play.
Okay.
That way I can say it with my eyes closed and stuff like that without reading a music sheet or whatever, you know. But the story's in my head already, and I just have to deliver that song the way I'm thinking in my head. I have to deliver that song, and hopefully it relates to the listener. And the listener lets me know what's going on with the song. Like when I said maybe last time I was here or whatever, I'd write the song, then I called up a young lady or girls and let them hear it and see what they thought about it.
Nice.
And they let me know. So I finished the song. If they didn't let me know, I wouldn't finish it. I got a lot of songs right now that I've never finished before. But I've licensed the song to rappers.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, and basically, I think, well, it's going to be hard for this new generation to do the hip-hop thing, what I was doing. But then again, the whole breakout market is a different frame of mind. Because the way I thought then, clearing up a problem which you might have with your girlfriend or whatever, they don't talk about love anymore. To me, rap is the new blues, you know, and they're talking about stuff that's material to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to go along with that, you know, because I had my shot at it, you know, with my bell-bottom pants and all that stuff. I had my shot, you know. It worked, but then again, the money came slow. So I just had to wait until my turn come, I guess, you know, or just continue to do concerts until it does.
Well, people are still paying to go see you, and there's people here, I told you. I'm here at KVCR right now that are waiting for this interview to be over so that they can come in with their albums and have you sign them. You've got fans all over the place, man.
That, yeah, is really, my album must have cost them a young fortune.
Yeah,
you know,
may have.
The new company that I'm with, I did not sign myself yet, but I know who did it. You know, but, you know, it's like, what do I know about the music industry? It's maverick.
I've spoken with so many people who've been playing 40, 50, even 60 years or so, and they don't recognize what's happening today. They can release a record, but it's usually followed by, yeah, whatever that means.
Well, and you know, the kids are the ones who start them off and get them to play that on the radio long enough for their parents to hear it, you know.
Yeah, pass it on like that.
Yeah, pass it on like that. I think that's a big marketplace.
Sure. Hey, you were saying with me and you, that was kind of addressed to some of the guys and how to maybe solve their problems with the young ladies and whatnot. When you initially wrote down me and you, were you thinking of someone specific that was?
Yep.
Yeah?
Yep, I got to the point after Baby You Got It. I mean, actually, the song will probably, if you put them all together, probably tell a life story.
Oh.
You know, different titles and stuff like that, and the stuff in between.
Often I will ask if a song is about, say, a specific person or situation, or if it's about, say, a general idea of being in love, or here's what you might do if you're in this situation. But me and you, this was written about someone specifically, but then you...
It was written about the homie. They're breaking up and going back together, more or less.
So this one was more the idea.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll also admit to you, before we move away from that song, when you got to the point where you were speaking instead of singing, I sat there taking what you were saying, and then I was trying to sing it to see if it had the right cadence that, were these lyrics and now he's just talking? What's he doing here? And so I was just playing around with that one. Oh, you know, another thing about songwriting, and I appreciate the fact, by the way, I would much rather speak with a musician who's writing more of their own material as opposed to someone who's getting it from somewhere else. But another thing about songwriting, I feel like a lot of your songs came from interesting and or catchy lyrics. You know, you had the words, and then music was added as a vehicle to carry the words.
That's where Joe Hooven came in and writing it down on music sheets. Then we have to have the musicians in the studio follow that instead of following me, because once I get going, I'm gone. Joe did the most important part, you know. Joe was the arranger for the songs. I mean, songs have to be laid out musically, but you have to be able to play the song right when it comes to someone reading the music sheet. They have to be able to do the song the way it was originally done, and that determines the originality of the song. This is the way it will be from now on.
But let me show you the kind of love that you've been searching for. Please believe me, I couldn't love you more. Take a chance on me.
It's been Music in Conversation with Brenton Wood for this edition of KVC Arts. This was amongst his last interviews, and I count myself very fortunate for this interview and all the conversation before and after and one separate time as well. Brenton Wood passed away at the beginning of 2025 at the age of 83. More conversation with Wood at kvcrnews.org/arts, then just search his name. Thanks again to Brenton Wood, a.k.a. Al or Alfred Smith. Thanks also to his son, Brandon Smith, for bringing him to the KVCR studios. Here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Sandy Hodela, Zach Mays, Champ Chipman, and Shireen Awad. Many past KVC Arts, including additional conversation with Brenton Wood, can be found at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.
Darling, take a chance.